Hello friends, welcome to Wings Neighborhood. I'm your host, Varsha Vaishampayan, and I'm joined by my friend and co-host, Rupa Bhandarkar. My heart is filled with joy, sadness, and inspiration all at once today. This is our last episode of the series. You've listened to us, laughed with us, and hopefully got inspired each time. With roller coaster of these emotions, we bring you today an influential leader, Debbie Waters. She's pragmatic, unpretentious, and above all, empathetic leader. Debbie is the global head of private bank operations and technology at Citigroup, also leads the commercial bank technology and institutional client group called ICG. Debbie has a passion for diversity and leads diversity for her division. In this episode, I had so many highlights that it was difficult for me to pick a few. So I will just give you some hints and challenge you to find answers in this episode. Here comes the hints. I need to give critical feedback to someone I respect and care for. How should I do this effectively? How can I find sponsors and allies at work? Should I just ask? Is that enough? I want to have an executive presence. Is it about how I dress up, my body language, how I behave, or something else? I work for a very large global company. How do I navigate my career in my big company? I also love Debbie's quote in this episode. She says, challenges build character. So true. And now here comes the best part. Debbie made her husband read her favorite three books before she decided to marry him. Find out what are these books and you will know why she asked him to read these books. Ladies and gentlemen, since this is our last episode of the series, I also invite you to take a challenge. If you listen to all of our episodes, then tell us what is one advice that you heard from all our speakers consistently about work and life balance. Go ahead, take the challenge and leave a comment for us. Now, without any further ado, let me present to you Debbie Waters. Hi, Debbie. Welcome to the Wings Neighborhood. Debbie, you and I have known each other for a very long time from our city days. And you know, I was hoping that you will say yes to be a guest on our podcast. So thank you for saying yes and making the time for us today. Debbie, I've seen you grow from being an individual contributor to now a managing director, managing large global teams and doing it successfully for 25 years. I always respected you, Debbie, as an influential leader who has that executive presence, but never lost the touch of empathy. In a Citigroup is a giant global bank. You can easily get lost if you didn't know how to navigate this large firm. You know, leadership roles are often given to people who are seen as leaders, who have visibility, and who have sponsors. Now, all of that is easier said than done. I worked for Citi for almost 9 years. I got some exposure, got some incredible opportunities, but I was not sure if that will get me to where I needed to go. So I jumped the ships and went to Goldman. But you have done it well. You did it for 25 years. Debbie, take us through your journey and tell us how to build an executive presence and what does it mean to you?
Sure. So, and then I can talk a little bit about executive presence, but from my perspective, my leadership journey started with me as an individual contributor writing software. I started in the aerospace industry, which was really fun. And then I moved to the financial industry. And when I started in the financial industry, as I said, I started as an individual contributor writing code. After about a year or so in this role, I got an opportunity to lead a very small project with my first employee working for me. Actually, he was a contractor. And I will say, I think this is the most difficult transition of a person's career from managing yourself to managing somebody else. Because when it's yourself, if you need to put in the hours or there's certainly something you want to achieve, you just figure out how to do it. It becomes very different when you're actually managing somebody else because you have to figure out how to motivate them. And that's not always easy. But after I managed to deliver that project successfully, I was given a larger project and another project and a larger team. And that went on for a while. I also had the opportunity to work in different areas of my firm, different businesses, which was really fun. I would say for me personally, the biggest career transition following the first leadership role was really on my return from my maternity. I came back at a time where my leadership changed, both on my business partner side and my manager while I was out. I came back to where they had decided I'm going to be a co-manager. So they had given me a partner. And when I started looking, the program that I came back to was actually failing. So this was a really challenging time. And what I did at that point was I sort of raised it to my leadership. And it was a very scary time because I had a new boss and a new business partner. I basically said to them, the emperor has no clothes on. And what happened was because I raised this point, they came back to me a couple of days later and said, wow, you're actually right. You're now in charge. So for me, it was tough because you're a new mom and you're trying to figure out how to balance being a new mom. I had this new role at work with a new set of people and a big problem. But luckily, I raised the issue. I did well when I was given the responsibility. And then, you know, that started driving more and more changes. And I would say when you think about your leadership journey, it's really about taking risks so that you can try new challenges and that, you know, as long as you deliver, you get to have the next opportunity. So if I look back at my career, I feel my leadership style that has enabled me to grow, it's really about transparency, honesty, delivery, communication, strategy, and really investing in my people. And then to answer your other question, you know, how do you establish executive presence? First of all, watch others. Who do you interact with who has that executive presence? What do you think makes them have that executive presence? And then I would say practice. Put yourself into situations where, first of all, you do know the answers and you are comfortable. And then gradually over time, put yourself into situations where you don't, but you know that you can get to the answers and that you have to remember, as you grow as a leader, you have to make decisions with less and less information. And that's part of what executive presence allows you to do.
That's a great journey and some great tips there, Debbie. Great way to start. And you know, it's what you said is a segue into the next question I had. You know, as a leader and manager, as you mentioned, it's important to have tough conversations with your team and management. And you mentioned, as you came back, you said the emperor has no clothes, you raised issues. Let's dig a little bit deeper into that. Any advice specifically on speaking to power, not the most comfortable, or providing candid feedback to your teams and still keeping them motivated? These are very honest, radical conversations that need to be had.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. First of all, I think that it's crucial to actually be honest with your team. It's very easy to tell somebody all the things they're doing well. It's much harder to tell them the things that they need to improve. And as a leader, that's your responsibility. And I think the way you can do that is with empathy, with understanding where they currently are in their career or their project or whatever their current situation is. But you can listen to them, hear them out, but also then help them learn the times that they can slightly change their style or adjust how they're operating. And if you can do it point in time, that's even better. Coming out of a meeting, in a presentation that they did, et cetera, et cetera. And when you think about giving that constructive criticism, and when you think about leadership and empathy, to be a really good leader, you need to motivate your team. And the only way you can truly motivate your team is to understand them. What is the situation that they're currently going through? What are their concerns? What are their aspirations, et cetera? And when you understand all of that, then you can find the right tool to help motivate them to get to the next level or the next challenge. Because people are motivated in lots of different ways. Some people want recognition. Some people are doing something for the greater good. Some people are doing it because they're passionate about it. So you have to understand the person and help them get there.
That is a great advice, Debbie. I think, and if I heard you right, you're saying that you can give critical feedback, but while you're doing it, if you find what motivates them, then that feedback is absolutely going to be, they will accept it, they'll work on it, because you're not just telling them, hey, this is wrong, don't do it again. You're finding a way to motivate them so that they continue to improve. That's a great point. So let me pick this up again a little bit. You know, they say that, I think there was a McKinsey study that I've read that they said executives need to govern four things, business, culture, team, and self. And I specifically tie that to one of the other issues that most women in the middle feel, that they don't get a big picture all the time, especially if you're working for a very large companies. It's hard to see what's happening on the top. How do I align myself to what's happening on the top? What culture? How do I follow that? What advice would you give these women to make themselves visible and break out of that middle so they can be seen ready for a bigger role?
So I'm a huge believer in having a conversation with your management. Nobody is responsible for your career but you, but your manager, especially if they're a good manager, is there to help. So first of all, let them know what you want to do and what your ambition is, because if you don't tell somebody, they can't help you. A great story is that somebody who worked for me for lots of years, he and I were having a conversation, and out of the blue, he said to me, you know, I'd really like to work in Asia. And I said to him, you never, ever told me that. Well, he actually ended up ultimately working in Asia. But what happened for the next probably 6 or 7 months was every time I saw an opportunity in Asia, I sent it over to him. So you really have to ask about it. Second of all, use your network. Lots of different opportunities. And if you step back and you think about it, you do have a network. You probably are saying to yourself, no, I don't really. But take 10 minutes and sit there and think about, who do you talk to every day or periodically? So use your network to help you get some visibility. Find out what somebody else is working on. Find out what you're doing that could help that person. And use that network to introduce you to people you do not know. I think that's really, really important. And then volunteer. I truly believe if you look at these large firms or most firms these days, we all do our day job, but there are so many ways that you can give back to the organization, the community in different ways. And you'll find that when you do that, you meet different people. It gives you an opportunity to, you know, sell yourself and demonstrate your expertise. To be honest, one of the reasons I got one of the jobs in my career was because I volunteered to do something that was outside of my organization. I met somebody who about 3 months later reached out to me and said, hey, I have a role. Would you be interested in it? So that doing above and beyond, and do something you're passionate about. I'm a believer in when you volunteer to help with something, it should be something that you're really excited to be part of, because we all have a lot of work in our day-to-day responsibilities.
Awesome. Varsha and I both are big fans of volunteering, both inside within our companies and outside. And volunteering for Wings is what got me here and got me talking to you.
So. Yeah, this is a fantastic example.
Exactly.
Of
exactly.
Doing more.
Debbie, you mentioned, you know, in addition to your day job, you're also a sponsor for inclusion and diversity for your division overall. I would love to know what's your focus. And, you know, right now there is a huge spotlight on women of color as well. How are you ensuring that women of color feel that they have equal opportunity to grow and rise as leaders? Anything that you may be doing or have found to be particularly valuable?
So first of all, when we talk about inclusion and diversity, I always start with inclusion. Because if you don't have an inclusive environment, diversity isn't going to matter, because you're not going to attract that diversity into the organization. I'm really focused on women, period. Our Black and Latino talents. We've been working on diverse abilities, which I'm really excited about. We've done some great things with making sure we have closed caption and that we're recording meetings with closed caption, and certain tools that individuals with hearing impairments or visual impairments could use. Of course, focused on LGBTQ. I think for women in general, and then what I've learned a lot in the last certainly several months, because last year has been a terrible year for our Black partners and our individuals, certainly in the US, is that we really need to make it possible for women and certainly Black women to be able to take risk and to feel comfortable that they can take that risk. You know, I used to always think that women in general need to be pushed to take a risk, but some of the conversations I've had over this last year really educated me to understand that sometimes folks who've come up through a very challenging background are not comfortable with taking risks. I also think it's really important to over-communicate on this topic. I talk to anyone and everyone who will listen to me about the things we need to change for us to be an inclusive environment. And I also truly believe you have to be a little uncomfortable in order to get comfortable with inclusion. So you have to ask a lot of questions that you might not have historically wanted to ask because you feel really embarrassed or uncomfortable asking. But if you do it in the right way and you ask the right person, they'll understand you're trying to learn and that will make us better. So that's what I really focus on.
You said something very important that just you have to be comfortable in being uncomfortable. And that is sometimes holds more leaders back because they don't know how to start a conversation. Should I say Black or should I say African-American? Should I say this or should I not? Right. And as a result, we just shut ourselves down because it's better to not talk. So over communication is such a good thing that also you said make them comfortable because sometimes people specifically, they don't take risk or they don't speak out or they don't have a voice because maybe I have accent. Maybe I'm saying something wrong. Maybe I shouldn't be saying it. But if they have that comfortable supporting environment, they could be much more free to step up and talk and give their feedback or their responses. So first of all, thank you for doing that. And I appreciate that. And I hope more and more women are stepping up at Citi under your leadership.
Absolutely. And more of our allies too. Which is critical because there are still not enough women in the workforce to get to 50-50 parity. So we need our allies.
Totally. Well said.
You're listening to the Showing Up as a Leader podcast hosted by Wings for Growth. If you're ready to take the leap and build your wings on your way up, sign up for our leadership development program at www.wingsforgrowth.org.
All right. So let's have some fun questions, Debbie. Is that okay with you? We always do that to our speakers. Okay, so your first question is your favorite book.
So I have three favorite books. And when I first met my husband, I said to him, you had to read all these books. Otherwise, I don't know if we could date further.
I love it.
Shogun by James Clavell. I just think the whole history of the Japanese society is fascinating. And actually, as a business person, if you think about all the politics in that book, it's really fascinating. I am also like to laugh. So I'm a big fan of John Irving, and Hotel New Hampshire is one of my favorite books. I actually missed my subway stop years and years ago reading that book because it was so engaging. And then finally, I really like the book Exodus by Leon Uris.
And did your husband ever ask you, why are you asking me to read these books before you can date me?
He read them all.
Devoted. Awesome.
All right. So the next question, your favorite leader.
You know, I was thinking about that question a lot. And she's definitely a leader, but she's probably not somebody you think of as a traditional leader. But Billie Jean King is who I think of. She's incredibly courageous. She stood up for what was right. She took risks, including her career, her compensation. She changed not only tennis, but actually sports for women over the years. She started her own, you know, Women's Tennis Association. She got men and women equal compensation for the big Grand Slams. I mean, she's a pretty amazing person. She was recognized as Sports Illustrated Sportsman of the Year in 72. She was Times Person of the Year in 75. She won a Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2009. I mean, she's a pretty impressive leader, especially when I personally think of all I work on and inclusion and diversity. She's somebody I look up to.
Yeah, that's really awesome. I didn't know so much about her, so thank you for sharing. Okay, so the next one is your favorite TV show.
I hate to admit it, but it would be Star Trek. I grew up with a science teacher and we had to watch it for dinner. And when the new Star Trek movies came out, I insisted my son watch the old Star Trek before the new. He did complain about the special effects, but he did get through them. So he now too is a Star Trek lover.
Awesome. We didn't have that before. All right. So next one is your favorite vacation.
So my favorite vacation is actually a cruise. We do an annual cruise with my parents and the family. And for me, it's the joy of being with the multi-generations. My son gets quality time with my parents, especially as he got older. So that's personally a favorite. And then I'm a big Tuscany fan. I love Italy.
I love to. My God, I can be there forever. Okay, so next one is your favorite drink.
Snapple lemon iced tea, but I do also love my wine, if I'm honest.
You can
more
be
so
honest
than ever in the COVID era.
Any specific wine?
We're big Italian wine drinkers.
Okay. So the next and last one, your favorite leadership quote.
There's a special place in hell for women who don't help other women. Madeleine Albright.
Awesome. I love this. This one we're going to highlight. Thank you. So that's a wrap on a rapid fire. Rupa, over to you.
Awesome. Love the quote. And we all agree with you. Another quote that you mentioned, Debbie, when we spoke last time is challenges build character. How have challenges shaped you to be who you are?
We're people. We make mistakes. And I think that, you know, facing that challenge or something you didn't think you can do, it actually helps you learn. It builds confidence because actually, once you face the challenge, you know you can do it. So the next challenge isn't quite as scary, which really makes us braver. So I have faced a lot of challenges. I talked a little bit about when I came back from my maternity leave. That was really a challenge. You know, first time moms, you don't know how to balance everything. You don't know everything about your child and when your work changes. So that was a challenge. One of my biggest challenges was my boss's boss was not happy about something I was doing and I had to go and address it. And that was a really hard thing to do. I had to talk to him and basically have a challenging discussion around that. It ended up being the best discussion I've ever had. And what it taught me was to adjust my style to situations. And that has helped me over the years face other challenges. And I think you face challenges whenever you change a job. There are things you don't know. There are people you don't know. But once you've changed a job once and you know you can successfully do it, then the next time you want to take that challenge, whether you know the business or the product or the industry, or, you know, I took over operations in addition to technology. That was something I had never done before, but I asked some people for some help and that's how I got over those hurdles.
You know, something very related to that, just an extension of that question that Rupa just asked. You can't let your failures define you. You have to learn from them. But again, these are one of those things that I say easier said than done. Once you fail, you either don't want to talk about it, you don't want to accept it, or really don't want to own it up, or just rather not, you know, rather not talk about this. How do you learn from your failures and how do you go and accept them and not be worried about, okay, this is going to be written up on my performance review at the end of the year?
Yeah, you know, Varsha, you raised a really good point. We don't like to own up to our mistakes. And I think that's the first thing that you need to do, right? Because people may remember your mistake if you don't own and adjust it. But if you go and you acknowledge it, and it's really about how you recover. So have you acknowledged it? What did you do to change it? So going forward, you don't make the same mistake. If you ignore it, that's when you're not going to have it forgotten. So you need to know you can't make the same mistake again, right? So that's again, going to learning from it. You have to do the other things you're doing well. And then you should check in with whomever was involved in that mistake, right? Because it's very easy to just sort of want to cover it over, run away, not address it again. But you have to work with people and you have to build relationships, and relationships are built on trust. And so acknowledging the mistake, checking in with the individuals involved with the mistake so they know you're not making it again and that you're taking this really seriously. And then that lets you build trust because the next time you make a mistake, and it'll probably be a different one, but you've built that trust because you've been able to handle this, the mistake's not going to be as big of a deal because it'll be few of you working together to solve it rather than you being the only one making the mistake.
That's a good advice. I actually had an experience, something like that, Debbie, when I was at Citi. I worked on a great presentation for the head of the desk, and we worked very hard, and we thought we have an amazing proposal, being the technology team. And the head of the desk really didn't have the time to go through 20 pages of presentation. So she literally threw the presentation across the desk and said, look, what is this junk? I don't have time for this. And I didn't know how to respond. And I was very hurt and disappointed. And then somebody, my mentor at Citi, gave me advice that, you know, you should go talk to her, that you would have appreciated the feedback differently. And I did. And that was the best thing I've ever done. Since then, we're still friends today. We talk to each other, and I always remind her of that. So, you know, something good can come out of this too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Look, people make mistakes, and any person has made a mistake. So if you just spend the time to talk to them, they'll remember over time that they've made mistakes and that they learn from it. So they'll give you a little bit of leeway.
And what you might have thought that this was your failure may not be your failure. And in that case, if I thought, okay, I failed and I never had a conversation with her, I would have thought that and then didn't really learn that there is a different way of doing things.
And it also goes back to your other questions around challenges, right?
Yeah.
You took that and you had the wherewithal to go and say, hey, this didn't go well. So that was a challenge you overcame, which taught you and made you more confident next time.
Exactly. All right. So, no, I was going to say that, let me take one more question on the similar topics. When I was starting my career as a manager, and that was my first job at Citi as a manager, I had heard a couple of times people say, don't take things personally. And I always thought, why do people say that? I love what I'm doing. I'm giving my 10, 12 hours of my life to this job. And I really didn't like it. What are your thoughts, Debbie? How should women, or men for that matter, deal with that?
Yeah, I was going to say that I don't think taking things personally is a male or a female kind of thing. I think sometimes when you say, are you taking this personally, it equates to, oh, you're being emotional and how you're responding to this. And so, first of all, I'd like to start with the fact, and this is something we did some training on, and they say, assume positive intent. Assume that if somebody's saying something to you, they're not trying to be offensive. They're not trying to insult you. They may be their style. They may not know better. So that's the first thing. But if you equate taking things personally to emotional, I say, why shouldn't we be emotional? I'm not suggesting sitting down and crying in a meeting, but I am suggesting emotion is passion. Bring that passion with you to work. Bring that enthusiasm. Bring the excitement. You know, that shows that you're engaged and that you want to be here. But, you know, when you show that type of emotion, it brings people in and gets them engaged as well. So I don't have an issue with people being emotional. This is great work. And if you bring that excitement, wonderful. So I don't think it's a bad thing at all. I think it's, again, you know, it's also the other thing that I think is really hard for people, and this sort of ties into it, is that when it ties to some of your other questions, it's really hard to be self-reflective. And I think as a leader, you do need to be self-reflective, and you might need a few days. If somebody's given you that constructive criticism, what are you going to do about it? Do you sit there and take it personally, or do you step back and say, wait, maybe there's something right in what they're saying? So you can take that and learn from it, which I think is critical to leadership.
And that is a very good point, that if feedback is being given to you, you should take this objectively and not take it personally. But if this is about your knowledge and values and your passion and what you believe in, you should take things personally.
Yeah. Look, we spend a lot of time at work, right? My husband these days would say I spend more time working than I spend with him, even though we've been locked up together for over a year at this point.
Absolutely. I'm loving this discussion. And, you know, as both of you were sharing your experiences, just such valuable insights for our listeners as they think about, you know, I was just envisioning somebody who's hesitant to go have that conversation, who's faced a setback, who's faced a challenge and hesitating to have that tough conversation, to see good come out of that, out of a tough conversation like that, it's absolutely amazing and may encourage somebody to go have that conversation. Now, continuing along similar way, right? We talked about setbacks, we've talked about challenges. The next thing I want to talk about is around crisis. Being a resilient leader through a crisis can be a great platform to actually show and demonstrate leadership in the truest sense. Any examples, Debbie, where you may have done that? Anything you want to share around that?
Well, I think all of us are managing through a crisis now if you lead people. I mean, none of us could have ever imagined that we'd be living in the situation that we're living in right now. And for the extended amount of time that we're living in this situation. So, you know, what are the kind of things I've done throughout this crisis? Again, comes to good leadership, period. Communication. Often, as much as you can, in numerous different ways, because not everyone will get on a call. Not everyone can be on Zoom. Not everyone will read their emails. Not everyone will look at our internal Facebook-like site. So communicating, communicating, communicating. Connecting with the teams, especially in the beginning of this crisis when we didn't know what was happening, when we were losing so many lives around us and people that were important to us. So trying to talk to the teams and understand what they needed. You had to switch to work from home. What do you need to be able to be successful to work from home? Oh, you need an hour at 11 o'clock every day because you need to work with your son or daughter? Fine. So how do we be flexible? You need to be a guiding light during a crisis. You need to give people something to look forward to, because when it was so hard, they needed to know your job was still going to be here. You're going to be fine. I'm going to give you the freedom you need to do to adjust your life to this new life that we're living. And I think that that's what you need to do at a time of crisis. Really, this is where you go back to empathy. Empathy matters here. Understanding what somebody needs and flexibility is really, really critical. I mean, if you go back to, I've also managed through the 2008 financial crisis, which in some ways I think was one of the toughest times of my career because my team was so impacted by it. And there were things that you just couldn't control, just sort of like we're here now. So I think resiliency is not just for leaders. I think resiliency is for anybody and everybody, especially in the financial industry, but in numerous industries, right? Regulations change, bosses change, projects change. And if you can be resilient and you can adjust with those changes, then you will be successful. It's something I always tell our college hires when we bring them in, that that flexibility, that resiliency is going to be something that serves you really, really well for the rest of your career. Listen first instead of reacting so quickly.
You know, I'm so tempted to ask you one more question, even though we were just at the last question. I think this is a phenomenal conversation. You managed work and life. You said that you have children, you were working. How did you do that? We asked that to all our guests and everybody has kind of similar answer, but I want to hear yours.
So years ago, when I was expecting, I got the best advice from a mentor of mine. So the importance of mentors. And she said to me, take one day at a time. And I have to this day lived to that. So when my son was little and he had a baseball game and I wanted to leave at 4 o'clock to get to the baseball game, that was the most important thing that I did that day. And I made sure that I managed around it. If I had a big meeting, I had that as the priority for the day. I didn't get myself crazy thinking, oh my God, how am I going to get through the next 6 months or year? I just went day by day. The second thing is that I surrounded myself with fabulous people who helped make my personal life and my career possible. I was a single mom for a little bit, which was a really hard thing to do. I happen to have an amazing husband now who is really a true partner. But I also had a nanny for 11 years who was a godsend. And I tease her all the time. We still talk to her that she was my wife because she made everything possible for me. She was really a true partner. And I always made sure I worked for people that were good managers that I could talk to. And, you know, when my son was little, I was a morning person. But one day a week, I wanted it to be a priority that I took him to school. So I told my boss at that time, listen, on Thursdays, I'm not going to be in till 9. If you need me, you can call me. If you need me to switch the day, because you need me in for something, I'll switch the day. But those were the ways that I managed my, I wouldn't say exactly work-life balance, but the harmony that I've managed through the years.
Take one day at a time. That's a good advice. So, all right. I lied. I can get one more in. I'm looking at the clock. I'm like, okay, yeah, we have 5 more minutes. You also talk a little about, you know, build allies. Can you give us some tips or tricks that you have used to build those allies and sponsors for yourself?
Yeah. Well, first of all, be an ally yourself, because if you help someone, chances are they're going to help you as well. I think ask. A lot of times people don't ask. They just, you know, assume somebody won't want to help them. I have found over my career, if you go and ask somebody about their career, they will spend lots of times talking about their career or things that they've done. So asking is a really, really good way to do it. And recognize others who have been an ally or done something that's valuable, because that recognition and that acknowledgement goes really, really far.
Great advice. So now truly is the last question. I promise. So, you know, Debbie, 2020 has been a very difficult year for everyone, not just for women, but especially for working mothers.
Yes.
Some of the women had to voluntarily or forced out of the workforce. But that doesn't mean that they have stopped growing in their career or they're not thinking about their career. What is your advice for women who are now ready to take the leap and build their wings on the way up?
You mean getting back into the workforce or just?
Or simply growing, you know, you don't have to full-time work, right? You can continue to develop yourself.
You know, the advice I give to women is that you don't always have to be focused on building your career, what's next in your career. Sometimes you just work on where you are in your career and you do it exceedingly well, because there are times like the crisis we're living in right now that it might not be easy or possible for you to be focused on what's next for yourself. So what I say is do what you're doing and do it exceedingly well, because that's always going to serve you well. Whenever you're ready to do the next thing, as long as what you've been doing well, you can point to that and that will help you get to the next level. I also think that you have to talk to people. If you're ready for whatever's next, whether it's a bigger job or the next step in your career, et cetera, just tell people. It goes back to the same question we talked about earlier, because somebody can't help you if you're not letting them know. And then just take the plunge, take the risk. Because think about it, what is going to be the worst thing that happens? You don't get that job. You don't get that opportunity. You'll be disappointed, but so what? You did it and you put yourself out there. You learned to interview better, or you learned something about a new job. So the next time when you're willing to put yourself out there again, you're going to have that much more knowledge. So it won't be quite as scary.
Well, so take the plunge if you're ready. If not, glide for a while.
Yeah, but glide very successfully.
Okay. We have to amplify that. That's a very consistent response that we have heard from all of our speakers. And it's a very important one, because this is on everybody's mind.
Yeah.
So Debbie, that's a wrap. Thank you so much for being so honest and candid. Appreciate it.
Nice talking to both of you. And thank you again for having me on.
Thank you, Debbie. This has been wonderful. Thank you for your time.
It was fun. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in. We wish you the best as you take the learnings from this podcast and strive to show up as a leader in all those moments, situations, and interactions where you can make a difference. Build your wings and sign up to be part of the Wings program at www.wingsforgrowth.org.